She holds it in her palm and he laps it up happily. How long have you worked here? I ask her. She runs her fingers under the faucet to wash off the dog's saliva. About a year, since you came home from the hospital. Do you like it? It's not bad. That sounds enthusiastic. She laughs. It's a throaty sound, like the laugh of a 60-year-old lounge singer, and it makes me like her better. I've worked for some horrible people. You're not so bad. Wow, thanks. But I'm smiling now as well. The bread pops out of the toaster. Before I can tell her how I like it, Camila is already spreading butter and honey on top of the bread. That's how my mother used to make me toast. She used to let me do most of it, though. Ever since I was about 3 years old, she would step back and let me press down the lever for the toaster. Then I would take a pat of butter and let it melt onto the warm bread. Then a little smear of honey. Not too much, Tess. Camila is making me toast the way I like it. She's using the exact right amount of butter and honey. But instead of that uneasy feeling I've had most of the morning, it's comforting. I don't have to explain every little thing to Camila. She already seems to know me. It makes me feel taken care of, like when I was a little girl. She deposits the toast in front of me with a glass of water. She flashes me a warm smile. I'm going to clean up the bedrooms, unless by chance you made the bed. I don't think I've ever made a bed in my life. I vaguely remember my mother asking me to do it when I was young, but after she got cancer, it was the least of her concerns. And Harry never cared. If I ever made the bed, he would think I had lost my mind. Do I usually make the bed? She laughs again, that same engagingly throaty sound. Not even once the whole year, but Graham likes them made up. Can I help? She shakes her head. I'm sure you've had a difficult enough morning. You just stay here and enjoy your breakfast. Later we'll go shopping and take Ziggy for a walk. Camila takes care of feeding Ziggy. Then she leaves the kitchen to go upstairs. It's only after she's gone that my shoulders relax. Shopping and taking my dog for a walk. It doesn't seem like a terrible day. His belly, now full of food, Ziggy returns to me and rests his head on my lap, panting happily as I run my fingers over his fur. This is going to be okay. Yes, my memory is patchy, but I feel taken care of. I can still enjoy the simple pleasures. Yes, I liked my life before. I miss Harry and I miss running my company. But this is okay too, and Camila did a good job with the toast. I'm going to take the advice in that letter I wrote to myself and just try to enjoy the day. And then my phone buzzes on the table. It's the same sound my old phone used to make when I had a text message. Did somebody send me a message? Maybe it's Lucy or my father, or maybe it's Graham. Maybe he's the sort of doting husband who likes to check in on me at regular intervals. He seems like that sort of a sweet guy. I pick up my phone. There's a text message on the screen. But it isn't from Graham or Lucy or my father. It's from an unknown number. As I read the message, my mouth falls open. Don't trust the man who calls himself your husband. Chapter 7. Don't trust the man who calls himself your husband. I stare at the text message on the screen as I grip the phone in my right hand. I read it and reread it, hoping maybe it will say something different the second time. I do have a brain injury, after all. But no, it still says the same thing. My fingers are shaking as I type a reply. Who is this? Three little bubbles appear on the screen, flashing over and over. I sit there, frozen, waiting for the response. Meet me. I should say no to this stranger. The logical part of me is screaming out that this is extremely fishy. Somebody is texting me, trying to scare me, taking advantage of the fact that I have memory problems. Maybe they want to weasel some money out of me. Who knows what they want? I should block the number, ignore these text messages, and get on with my day. Then I think of the message I saw scribbled on my thigh this morning before the shower washed it away. I wrote it in a place that I knew Graham wouldn't see. It was a message to myself, something more personal than that letter I wrote. Find what? I have no idea what I had been trying to communicate to myself, but I have a gut feeling this text message might be the answer. Meet you where? The reply comes after several seconds. Do you know the dog park on 7th? I know where that is. There's a park on 7th Street, and within the park there is an enclosed area where people can take their dogs and let them roam free. I never had a dog before, but I've passed it several times. It's about 5 blocks away from here. After a hesitation, I type, yes, when? More bubbles flashing on the screen. I squeeze my left hand into a fist, hard enough that my fingernails dig into my palm. We can meet this afternoon. Tell Camila you want to take Ziggy to the park before you go grocery shopping. I stare at the message, shocked by the number of details this mystery person knows about my life. They know about Camila. They know the name of my dog, for God's sake. And they somehow know Camila is going to want to go grocery shopping later. I should tell them to forget it. This is too creepy. But instead of deleting the text messages like I should, all I can think is that I can't wait for the afternoon. I need more information. I can't just sit here twiddling my thumbs, wondering if the man I woke up next to in bed this morning is some sort of imposter. Can we meet now? More bubbles on the screen. God, why does it take this person so long to type a simple response? But when the reply appears on the screen, my stomach drops. No, you can't leave the house. I stare at the words. You can't leave the house. I look over at the back door with the lock that requires a key to open. But that's not the only door in the house. There's also the front door. I can go out that way. My heart is pounding as I grab the phone and march into the living room. Ziggy excitedly bounding after me. He wants to leave as much as I do. But when I get to the front door, the lock on the front is identical to the one on the back. I fumble with the deadbolt, unlocking it and trying the doorknob. But no luck. The stranger is correct. I can't leave this house. I'm trapped. I look down at the screen again. The stranger has written to me again. Tess? You're right, I can't leave. I know. That feeling of contentment I had only a few minutes earlier has vanished. My head spins, a panicked sensation rising in my chest. For a moment, I'm scared my legs are going to give out from under me. But I make it over to the sofa. I can't help but notice it's a brand new black leather sofa that's a far cry from the ratty futon that I remember sitting in just yesterday. But it wasn't yesterday. It was a long time ago. Years. My hands are shaking almost too badly to type, but I manage to get out 3 words. What's going on? Those bubbles again on the screen. God damn it. Why can't this person just tell me what's going on? Meet me this afternoon. Text me when you're leaving. I'll be there. I shake my head, staring down at the screen. Okay. Write my number on your arm where nobody can see it, then delete all these text messages. Don't tell anyone about it. I don't question these instructions. I locate a pen in the little cup on the kitchen island. I yank up the sleeve of my sweater and carefully transcribe the 10 digits of the phone number. I check and double-check to make sure I've got all the numbers copied correctly. Even though I would have sworn I didn't know how to delete text messages, I swipe my finger on the screen, and almost instinctively, I hit the delete button. I've done this before. My fingers remember how. I wonder if I've gotten these text messages before. I bring up the list of contacts on my phone. Graham, Dad, Camila, and Lucy. The mystery texter is not listed. Obviously, Graham knows how to get into my phone since he was the one who handed it to me this morning, and this person does not want him to know they have contacted me. I study my list of contacts. Camila and Graham are both strangers to me. I can't trust them. But I've known Lucy since college, and I've known my father all my life. Dad and I have never been close, though. My mother was the love of his life, and he never quite recovered after she got sick and died. That said, he's my father, and I trust him. I tap on Lucy's name first. I grip the phone, pressing it against my ear so hard that it almost hurts. After several rings, Lucy's chipper voice comes on the recording. Hey, it's Lucy. Leave a message. Lucy, I manage. It's Tess. I'm having the craziest day. I need to hear your voice. Please call me when you get this. I'm sorry if I sound weird. I need to talk to you. Please. I add, please, as soon as you can. Well, she'll get the idea to call me. I call my father next. Like Lucy's number, it goes immediately to voicemail. I leave another desperate message, hoping he'll find the time to call me back sooner rather than later. All I want is to hear a familiar voice to confirm everything the strangers in my house have been telling me. When I'm done making my two calls, I lay the phone down on the coffee table. I stare at it, willing it to ring. But it doesn't. I need to know the truth. I've got to make sure I get to that dog park this afternoon. Chapter 8. I watch TV while I wait for Camila to be done cleaning upstairs. I make it through an entire episode of The Price is Right. That used to be Harry's favorite game show, and we watched it together whenever we were home on a weekday. He was obscenely good at guessing the prices of the items. I don't get it, I would say to him. How on earth do you know what a sewing machine costs? He would grin at me.
The real question is, why don't you know what a sewing machine costs? I feel like public education may have failed you, Tess.
He never quite explained his uncanny ability to know exactly what the retail price of every item was. Was he up late at night, studying online sales websites? I'll never know now. While I'm waiting, I browse the internet on my phone. I find myself Googling my home spa, and it turns out my little company has gotten quite large over the last decade. I had just gotten a few key endorsements right before Harry and I were engaged, and it looks like they paid off. Before my accident last year, I was kind of a big deal. I even discover an article about myself, talking about how I turned a simple idea for luxury spa items you can use at home into a multi-million-dollar company. No wonder we had the money to turn this house into a palace. And no wonder Graham had to rush off to meetings to keep things going. After I Google my company, I type my name into the search engine, followed by the words car accident. There are no hits, no mention of an accident. In fact, after a slew of articles about me and my company, my name essentially vanished from the internet about a year ago. It's like I just disappeared. I feel a twinge of panic. I bring up the saved numbers on my phone, wishing Harry's name were on the screen. After our first date, I saved his number in my phone, so even after all the years we were together, I never bothered to memorize it. It never seemed important. But now I wish I had. Of course, it's 7 years later. Who knows if he even has the same phone number? My phone lingers over Dad. I already called him and left a message. He hasn't called back. Wouldn't he want to get in touch with me, his only daughter, after I've been in a devastating car accident? But then again, this information is only new to me. Everybody else has been living with the consequences of my accident for an entire year. I click on his number. I wait as the call connects, and I hear ringing on the other line. 1, 2, 3 rings, and then a click.
Hello, you've reached Douglas Stribble. Please leave a message.
My father sounds stiff in his message, but that's no surprise. My father is the kind of guy who manages maybe 5 smiles the whole year, and 2 hugs, one on Christmas and one on my birthday. He wasn't always that way. When I was a kid, he used to smile all the time. Maybe every single day. That's what losing the love of your life does to you. Dad, I try not to sound like a complete wreck in my message, although I'm sure he'll surmise I'm having a bad day based on the fact that I've left 2 of them and it's not even lunchtime yet. I really need to talk to you, so if you can call me back, please call me back, Dad. And I put the phone on my lap and stare down at it, willing it to ring. I don't care if it's Lucy or my father who calls. I just need to hear one familiar voice. Call, damn it. As I stare down at the screen, I feel a jab of pain on the right side of my skull. I reach out and touch the C-shaped scar. I lift my eyes from my phone, overcome by a surge of dizziness. The phone slides from my fingers as my vision grows cloudy. The entire living room seems to fade away to white, and I'm in a large office. I'm sitting behind a desk, and I hear a rap at the door. "Come in," I call out. The door cracks open, and a man enters the office. It takes me a moment to recognize that it's Graham. A little younger, but with the same hair the color of sand, and the same blue eyes behind a pair of wire-rimmed frames. His face splits in a smile.
"Hello, Ms. Treble."
"Please, Mr. Thurman," I say. "Call me Tess."
"Graham," he says, as his hand fits into mine.
He gives me a solid squeeze, not too hard and not like a limp fish, and very warm and dry.
"It's so nice to meet you, Tess."
"Likewise," I say. "Your references are amazing. I'd love to have you aboard." His eyes make steady contact with mine.
"I'd love to work here. I read about your company in Entrepreneur magazine, and what you've done is amazing."
It's hard not to notice how attractive this man is. Obviously, I'm already engaged to Harry, but I'm not interested for myself. Maybe he's someone I could set up with Lucy. He is smart and handsome and well-liked, if his references are to be believed. He's a catch. I gesture at the chair in front of my desk. "Please, have a seat. Let's talk more about your future here."
"I'd love to."
He maintains eye contact as he takes a seat. He's good at that. I always look at the other person's forehead, but Graham seems like the sort of man who wouldn't have any trouble looking straight into somebody's eyes. "So, could you tell me a little about yourself, Graham?" He smiles at me now, and I can't help but notice that his teeth are straight and flawlessly white. If I ask him what his biggest weakness is, he'll probably be able to answer honestly that he's just too perfect.
"I'm originally from upstate New York," he says. "I got my bachelor's degree in accounting from Ithaca. I'm CPA certified, and I've been working at a firm in the city for the last 5 years.
"Are you still with that firm?" He hesitates for a beat.
"Unfortunately, they had to make some cutbacks recently, so now I'm looking for something new."
And he didn't make the cut. But Graham doesn't seem the least bit ashamed or apologetic about the fact that he was laid off. He still maintains that steady eye contact. I can't help but think to myself that this man doesn't look like an accountant. He's too confident, too personable to spend his days crunching numbers. "So, what made you go into accounting?" Just as Graham opens his mouth to answer my question, the office fades away again to white. And then I'm back in my living room, sitting on my leather sofa. Except the difference is that Camilla is standing over me, a worried expression on her face. "Tess?" I rub my right temple. I feel dazed, like I just woke up. "What? What happened?" There's a deep crease between Camilla's eyebrows.
"I think you had a seizure."
I suck in a breath. Graham had mentioned the possibility of my having seizures earlier when he said I couldn't drive, but I thought he was exaggerating.
"A seizure? You have them occasionally."
She looks worried, but not that worried, considering I just had a big old seizure.
"They are like mini seizures. Graham calls them absence seizures. You zone out for a few seconds, sometimes right in the middle of a sentence."
I've never had a seizure before, at least none that I remember. I didn't enjoy it, but the scene that played out before my eyes felt so real. It felt like something that must have really happened to me, like I was living it all over again. But that doesn't make any sense, because in that scenario, I was meeting Graham for the first time while he was applying for a job at my company. But that's not how we met at all. So obviously, my damaged brain is playing tricks on me. "I need some fresh air," I manage. Do you think I could take Ziggy for a walk outside?" Camilla cocks her head thoughtfully. I'm relieved she hasn't immediately rejected my request right off the bat.
"Maybe in a bit. I'll let him out into the backyard. It's fenced in."
Ziggy clearly understands the word backyard because he is nearly levitating with excitement. He follows her to the back door, and so do I,
although my legs are unsteady after what was apparently a seizure. I watch as she pulls a key from a chain around her neck. She fits the key into the lock on the back door and turns it. Ziggy bounds outside. "I'll go sit with him," I say. At first, I think she's going to slam the door shut and lock it again, but instead she steps back. "Go ahead." I feel a rush of relief as I step out into the fresh air for the first time today. I feel almost as happy as Ziggy looks. The locked door was so claustrophobic, but maybe that's just something they do at night. Obviously, I'm not a prisoner in the house. I pick up a stick from the ground and I toss it into the air. Ziggy goes wild with excitement. While Ziggy retrieves the stick, I survey the backyard, which is different than it was when Harry and I bought the place. It was mostly dirt back then with a few scattered blades of grass, possibly weeds sprouting every few feet. But Harry loved it. He grew up in an apartment in Brooklyn, and we lived in a shoebox in Manhattan for the entire time we'd been together. This was his first house, his first backyard.
"We should put a hot tub out here," he said with a glint in his eyes.
And now I see it. The hot tub we dreamed about, surrounded by purple shrubs at the far end of the yard. It's empty now, but I can imagine it filled with piping hot water. I can imagine sitting in a hot tub with Harry, him grinning at me with that suggestive look that never fails to turn me on. But no, I've probably never shared this hot tub with Harry. I've only been in it with Graham. But the thought of sitting in this hot tub naked with that man makes me sick to my stomach. "Don't trust the man who calls himself your husband." Ziggy is looking up at me, the stick in his jaw, nudging my hand so that I'll take it from him. He wants to play. At least I know my dog isn't lying to me. Dogs aren't deceptive the way people are. "I've got to meet the stranger who's been texting me. Maybe I can go now." I take the stick from Ziggy and I toss it one more time, all the way across the backyard. While he runs to get it, I go around the side of the house, to the fence out of the backyard. There wasn't a fence here when Harry and I first moved in, but now it's around the entire backyard, and it goes up higher than my head. And on the gate to get out of the backyard, there's a big, thick padlock. They have got to be kidding me. I can't leave the backyard. I'm trapped here. A sob forms at the base of my throat. What's going on with my life? Yes, my memory isn't what it used to be, and I had that strange episode this morning, which, okay, I'm going to admit, might have really been a seizure, but I'm not so bad that they need to keep me locked away like a prisoner. I should be allowed to walk around the neighborhood. My phone vibrates inside my pocket. At first, I think it's another text message, but the vibrating doesn't stop. Somebody's calling me. Maybe it's Lucy or my father. But then when I pull my phone out, Graham's name is on the screen. My stomach sinks. I'm not sure I want to talk to him. But what can I do? He's my husband. So I jab at the green button to take the call.
"Tess," his voice is upbeat. "How are you doing? How is your day going?"
A tear escapes from my right eye and I wipe it away with the back of my hand. "You locked me in the backyard." There's a long silence on the other line.
"Tess.
Why are you doing this to me?"
"Christ," he mutters under his breath. "I'm coming home."
In the background, he's telling somebody to cancel a meeting. I feel a sting of panic in my chest. I don't want him to come home. If he comes home, I will have no chance of getting to the dog park on my own. I swallow the lump in my throat. "You don't have to come home," I say to him.
"You're upset, though."
I'm okay. I take a breath. "Camila will take me out later, right?"
"Of course she will."
Graham's voice is gentle. He doesn't sound like an evil person. He sounds like he's genuinely worried about me, his wife of 4 years.
"Are you sure you're okay, though? If you need me—"
"I'm fine." He's quiet on the other line as he considers this.
"I'm sorry this is scary for you, Tess. I wish I could be there for you all the time. I hate that we have to lock up the backyard. I really do. But last month you—"
"It's okay," I say.
"You swear?"
"Yes," he sighs.
"Okay, I'll try to get home early."
"Okay." I squeeze the phone as I stare at the padlock on the door to the backyard. I take a deep breath, trying to push back the panicked feeling.
It's okay. I'll get out of here soon. I just have to wait until the afternoon. I can't do anything to jeopardize that meeting.
Tess, Graham says.
Hmm?
Listen,
he coughs.
I love you.
I blink at the phone. I'm not sure what to say to that. It's the last thing I expected him to say.
I'm sorry, he says quickly. I know it's weird to hear me say that, and you don't have to say it back. I don't expect that at all. I know you feel like you don't even know me, but I know you, and I just want you to know that I love you. You're my wife, and I just want you to be safe.
His voice breaks on the last few words of his little speech. He sounds like he means it. He doesn't sound like some psychopath who is holding me hostage in my own home. He sounds like a man who was just worried about his memory-impaired wife.
Tess, are you still there?
Yes, I am.
Okay, good.
He clears his throat.
Just hang in there. I know you're having a rough day, but I'll be home early and we'll have a nice dinner together. Then we can watch The Princess Bride.
He laughs.
For the chillionth time.
The Princess Bride. My comfort movie. The one my mother and I always used to watch together. He knows my comfort movie, and he's willing to sit and watch it with me for the jillionth time. My husband is a good guy. As you wish, I say. There's silence on the other line.
Okay, he finally says. Anyway, I better go, but I'll see you later, Tess.
That was strange. He has apparently watched this movie with me many, many times, yet he didn't seem to recognize the famous line from it that I just quoted.
As you wish.
Is that strange? I don't know. Graham certainly doesn't seem like any kind of monster from what I can tell. He sounds like he genuinely thinks he's doing this for my own safety. And maybe he really does. But either way, I intend to find out the truth. Chapter 9. Camila makes us a lunch of turkey sandwiches. I wait at the large wooden table that seats 8 in our dining room, feeling slightly preposterous to be sitting here all alone. I thought Camila would make me a sandwich and leave, but instead she makes 2 sandwiches and puts her plate down next to mine. She brushes a stray lock of her glossy dark hair behind one ear as she joins me at the dining table. "This is turkey a la Camila," she says. "You'll love it." I look down at the fairly ordinary-appearing turkey sandwich on the table. It's cut in half diagonally, the same way my mother used to cut sandwiches when she was still alive. I pick up the half and take a nibble. "Wow," I say. "This is delicious. What's your secret?" Camila gives another of her throaty laughs. "Actually, it's a spread that Graham introduced me to. It's like this crazy pesto guacamole sun-dried tomato thing. It's amazing. Your husband has excellent taste, even if he's a crap cook." There's an affectionate look on her face when she says his name. Even though I only really met Graham this morning, Camila has known him for an entire year. They know each other well. And Camila is really beautiful. I watch her chewing on her turkey sandwich out of the corner of my eye. I wonder if something ever happened between her and my husband. After all, I'm not exactly an ideal wife right now. Nobody would blame him if he had a moment of weakness. No, I need to stop. I've got enough to worry about. "Could we take Ziggy to the dog park after lunch?" I ask. "Sure," Camila says. "He loves it there." "Great." I have to suppress my excitement. I certainly can't tell Camila about the text messages I got this morning or give her any inkling that I'm meeting someone. "Thanks for taking us." "Hey, it's my job." I take a nibble of my sandwich. "Can I ask you a question?" "Of course." "Do I ever remember Graham?" Camila considers my question as she takes another bite of her turkey sandwich. She chews for what seems like an eternity. "Honestly, almost never. Usually you wake up thinking it's about 7 years ago." "Oh, that must be hard on him." She runs her tongue over her teeth. "The hardest part is when you talk about that guy, Harry, a lot." Harry was my fiancé. I mean, before." "Yeah, I know." I look into her big brown eyes. What is the deal with those eyelashes? Does she have eyelash implants?
Do you know why we broke up?
I don't know. For the first time since I met her, Camilla averts her eyes from mine.
Sorry, Tess.
I can't ignore the feeling that she's lying to me, but there's not much I can do.
It's okay.
I know how hard this is. She reaches out and places her hand on mine. Her palm is rough, which is a contrast with the silky smooth appearance of her skin.
I can't imagine what it's like to wake up and not know anyone around you. I mean, you must wonder if you can trust us.
A little, I admit. Camilla thinks about it for a second. Then she reaches for her purse, which is lying on the back of her chair. She rifles around until she comes up with her cell phone. It looks identical to mine, even though I am apparently very rich and Camilla can't be nearly as affluent. Maybe these iPhones are more common than they used to be. She messes with her phone for a few seconds, then she slides it across the table to me. The screen features a color photograph, a picture of me and Camilla, which looks like she took it while holding the phone in the air. Her arm is slung around my shoulders and we're both smiling. And I look happy, actually happy. I can see it in my eyes.
I took that a few months ago, she tells me. Just so you know, I'm not lying about knowing you for a year.
Her plump lips twitch.
And so you believe that you don't hate me usually?
I believe you.
Sure.
I do believe Camilla, but that doesn't change the fact that I need to shake her at the dog park. I finish the last bites of my sandwich just as Camilla finishes hers. She stands up to take our plates to the kitchen, but I beat her to it. I grab her plate and mine and bring them over to the sink. At least I can feel useful by clearing the table and loading the dishes in the dishwasher. And while I'm at the sink, I reach into my pocket. I check the numbers written on my arm, then type them into my phone. I send off a quick text message. Leaving soon for the dog park. The reply comes almost instantly. I'll be there.
Chapter 10.
Ziggy is almost deliriously happy to be going to the dog park. Like backyard, he seems to recognize the words, and he pants happily at the idea of it. I guess he's a social dog, although just about everything seems to excite him. I wish I had a tenth of his happiness. We're taking the car to the supermarket, and we're going to stop at the dog park on the way. It seems crazy to take the car 5 blocks, but we'll need it to get all the groceries home. It's frustrating that I can't drive. I always liked to drive. I love the feeling of the steering wheel under my fingers and my foot on the gas pedal as music blasts on the radio. I wonder if there's any chance I'll be able to drive again in the future. It doesn't seem likely. The thought of it would probably make me depressed, but it's hard to feel too sad when Ziggy is bouncing around and licking me. Camilla attaches Ziggy's leash to his collar, and we're about to head out the door when she stops short. She reaches into her purse and pulls out her phone. She stands there, reading a message off the screen.
Oh, she says, Graham is going to be home early.
I force a smile.
Great.
By the time I see him, I'll have sorted out what's going on here. I'll have met the mysterious stranger at the dog park, and I'll finally have some answers, for better or worse.
So we better just go straight to the supermarket then, Camilla says. You can take Ziggy to the dog park later with Graham.
My heart sinks.
But Ziggy is ready to go, she shrugs. I'm sorry, you'll have to go later with Graham.
With Graham? No, that definitely won't work.
Can't you drop me off at the dog park while you go shopping?
She shakes her head.
I can't do that. It's not safe.
A muscle twitches in my jaw.
It's not safe? I'm a grown woman. What do you think I'm going to do?
Camilla's pretty brown eyes darken.
It's my job to stay with you today. We're going shopping together, then you'll go to the dog park later. Got it?
I open my mouth to protest, but then I realize it's pointless. I won't convince Camilla of anything, but once she unlocks that door, there's not much she can do. She can't tackle me to keep me from walking away from her. I'll pretend to go shopping with her, but then when I'm at the supermarket, I'll just leave.
Fine, I say.
Camilla rubs her chin, studying my face. Finally, she nods.
All right, then. Let's get going.
I never asked what season it is, but I surmised from all the leaves in her backyard that it must be early fall. Camilla opens up the hall closet and hands me a gray zip-up sweater.
The feel of the sweater is so soft in my hands. I want to wrap my whole body in it. I want to bathe in this sweater. I check the label.
Cashmere,
Camilla snorts. It sure is. I look at the sweater, almost too intimidated to put it on.
I can't afford cashmere.
Of course you can. You guys are rich. I think back to all of those articles I read about my company, about how well it was doing. I still can't quite wrap my head around it. It feels like it must be some sort of mistake. Either way, I already own this sweater, so I may as well put it on. Ziggy seems heartbroken that we're not taking him with us on our trip. I'm not sure who feels worse about it, him or me.
Camilla unlocks the front door with the key around her neck, and I observe her carefully, noticing the shape of the key.
There's got to be a spare key around here somewhere. They wouldn't risk being trapped here if there were a fire or something.
Camilla drives a rusty green Nissan that's parked out in front of the house. As we walk out to her car, I wonder what she would do if I took off running. Would she chase me? Call the police? In any case, I don't think it would be a great idea to make a scene in my own neighborhood. I'll get away from her at the supermarket, which is only a short walk from the dog park.
So, how does it usually work when we go shopping? I ask as I buckle myself in. Do I have to follow you around?
Camilla starts up the car, which makes a strange crunching noise. It doesn't instill a lot of confidence in me. But I'm already brain damaged. What's the worst that could happen?
You usually grab a basket and do your own shopping.
Except I won't remember what I bought by tomorrow.
True, she winks at me. But isn't the shopping part the most fun?
Camilla slides a pair of sunglasses onto her nose, then she takes off down the block, the wheels of the car screeching in protest. As she drives far too fast, she fiddles with the radio controls using her right hand. She hits on an R&B station and turns the volume all the way up. I want to text the stranger to let them know I won't make it to meet them, but I can't let Camilla see me doing it. If this person truly wants to help me, I can't risk it. The dog park is on the way to the supermarket. It's about the halfway point. I look out the window as we approach the park, my heart accelerating. The dog park is a large enclosed space at the far end of the park, fenced in so the dogs can roam free without fear of them running away. Camilla skids to a stop at a red light, so I get a closer look at the dog park. There are three people inside. Two of them are women who are animatedly chatting with each other. That leaves the other occupant of the dog park. It's a man, I can tell that much, but it's hard to tell much else. He's wearing a dark baseball cap low on his forehead, a pair of sunglasses concealing his eyes, and a beard covers the lower half of his face. He's wearing a pair of baggy jeans and a dark brown jacket, his hands shoved deep into the jacket pockets. I stare at this man. Is this the person who's been texting me? Is that possible? The man looks up at the Nissan. Even though he's got on his sunglasses, I can feel his eyes on me. He's staring right at me. And then he takes his sunglasses off. Holy crap, is that Harry? My mouth falls open. I want to roll down the window and call to him, but I'm not even sure it's him. And anyway, the light has turned green and Camilla is speeding away. I sit back in my seat, gripping my knees with frustration. It's him. I'm sure of it. I knew he would never have abandoned me. We loved each other too much.
Camilla, could I wait at the park while you're shopping? I ask desperately.
Wait at the park? She frowns at me. What are you talking about? We're just going to be at the supermarket for 15 minutes. Then we'll head back.
Yes, but
I can't tell her why I want to go to the park without giving it away.
I just think it would be nice to have some fresh air.
Graham will take you there later. Don't worry about it. I'm not going to change her mind, but it doesn't matter. As soon as we get to the supermarket and I'm out of her sight, I'm going to the dog park myself. I'll text Harry to wait for me. The parking lot for the supermarket is nearly empty. I had been hoping it would be more crowded so it would be easier to slip away. But it's the early afternoon on a weekday, so that was unrealistic. Camilla tosses her sunglasses in the car and we get out together. As she stretches from the drive, a man in the parking lot lets out a low whistle. She snorts and rolls her eyes.
You wish, she remarks.
It's hard not to notice all the appreciative looks Camilla gets as we walk to the supermarket together.
from men and women. She's beautiful, like a sculpture. Even I can't help but admire her. Graham probably... No, I need to stop thinking about that. Anyway, I don't care. It wouldn't bother me in the slightest if the two of them were having an affair. They're both strangers to me, after all. When we get inside the supermarket, Camila grabs a shopping cart and hands me a basket. She looks me straight in the eyes. 15 minutes, then we meet at checkout, okay? When I don't respond, she says, You get me, chica? Uh-huh, I bob my head. Is there anything in particular that we need? Anything I should look for? You let me take care of that, she says. You get whatever you want. Something to help you enjoy the rest of your day. I get the subtext of what she's saying. Whatever I buy, it should be something I can use today, because by tomorrow, I likely won't even remember I have it. Camila takes off for the dairy aisle. I watch her disappear into the distance while I head to the display of soaps. It always amazed Harry that there could be an entire aisle just filled with soaps.
Why do you need a separate soap for your face and your hands? Aren't they all basically the same thing? Soap?
I pick up a bottle of watermelon soap. I pretend to consider buying it, in case Camila is watching me. But then, with my other hand, I pull out my phone. I punch in a message to the same number that texted me this morning. I'm at the supermarket. I just need to get away from Camila, then I'll come to the dog park. I'll be there in 15 minutes. The reply comes almost instantly. No, you won't. Delete these messages. What is he talking about? I'm a 10-minute walk away. Camila is nowhere in sight. Does he think I don't know how to get to the dog park? I'll be there. 15 minutes. Don't try it. Delete these messages. I frown. Before I can stop myself, I type, Harry? 3 bubbles flash on the screen repeatedly as I wait for his reply. My legs feel almost weak as the message pops up on the screen. Delete these messages. Now. Damn it. I do what he says. I delete the messages on my phone. But I have not aborted the plan. I can make it to the dog park. I just hope he waits for me. I drop the basket I've been carrying on my elbow onto the ground. I peek along the edge of the aisle, making sure Camila isn't in sight. We're supposed to meet in about 15 minutes, so that's how long I have until she notices I'm gone. It's plenty of time. I tuck my hair behind my ears. I still can't quite get used to how short it is. Why did I cut it? I had assumed it had something to do with the surgery I had after my head injury, but I don't know what to believe anymore. I miss my hair. I stride purposefully in the direction of the exit. Once I'm outside, I'll turn left, and then it's a 5-block straight shot to the park. It's funny how I remember it so well. I know how to get to the dog park, but somehow I can't remember the man I'm supposedly married to. There's something seriously wrong with that. I reach the sliding door, prepared to break into a sprint the second I step outside, but just as the automatic doors slide open, a large hand closes around my arm like a vise, and then a deep male voice booms in my ear,
Where do you think you're going?
Chapter 11. I freeze at the exit to the supermarket. The pressure of the hand grabbing my arm is intense enough to hurt. I may have a bruise tonight. There's no chance of getting away, that's for certain. I turn around to figure out who grabbed me. A middle-aged man is standing behind me, dressed in a gray uniform. He has a mustache and close-cropped gray hair, and muscles are popping out of the short sleeves of his uniform. His hand is still on my arm. My mouth feels too dry to swallow. I didn't steal anything. I put that watermelon soap back. I'm sure I did.
I never said you stole anything.
There is a gold ID badge pinned to the breast pocket of his uniform, emblazoned with the name Pete.
But are you supposed to be leaving here yourself?
My mouth falls open. Why can't I leave? Instead of answering my question, he drags me by my arm over to the customer service counter by the back door. It feels like he's about to rip my arm out of the socket. He grabs the microphone sitting on the counter, hits a button, and his deep voice booms out through the entire supermarket.
Camila Mendez to the front entrance. Camila Mendez to the front entrance.
I suck in a breath, panic rising in my chest. My plan is disintegrating before my eyes. What are you doing?
Let me go.
His hard, beady eyes look straight into mine.
If I let go of your arm, are you going to try to run?
I want to run, but I'm not kidding myself that I'm going anywhere with this guy blocking the entrance. So I shake my head. The pressure on my arm eases up as he releases me. Christ, this guy is strong. A few seconds later, Camila is racing to the front with her shopping cart. She's frowning, and there's color in her cheeks. She abandons the shopping cart by one of the checkout lines and runs over to me, her dark eyes flashing.
What do you think you're doing, Tess? She snaps at me.
Nothing, I raise my hands in the air. I was shopping, and this guy grabbed me. The burly guy, Pete, scoffs at me.
She was making a run for it. I stopped her before she got out the door.
Camila nods. Thanks so much, Pete. I appreciate it. He grins at her, obviously pleased that the beautiful Camila is grateful to him. She's got him wrapped around her finger.
My pleasure.
I jut out my chin. Fine. I was trying to leave. What's so awful about that? Camila shakes her head.
You can't do that.
Actually, I can. I'm an adult. I'm allowed to go out on my own. I wasn't going to take the car.
Camila and Pete exchange knowing looks. I'm getting so sick of everybody exchanging those looks, like they're all in on some secret that only I don't know. And I find it even more interesting that Harry knew I wouldn't make it out of here successfully.
I want to leave, I say through my teeth. I'll call the police if I have to.
Lady, I'm security,
Pete says. I snatch my phone out of my pocket, glad I took the time to delete Harry's text messages.
I'm calling 911. You can't keep me prisoner here.
Tess, please. Camila rests a hand on my arm before Pete can react. Her touch is gentle, at least. Can we talk? Privately?
I look between Camila and Pete, weighing my options. I want to try to make a run for it, but I don't think I'll make it. My best chance is to talk to Camila about it and explain how crazy this is, that I'm not some sort of dangerous mental patient who's going to get myself killed if I'm alone for 2 seconds.
Fine, I agree. Camila looks over at Pete. You can go. I'll handle it from here.
His eyebrows shoot up to his hairline.
You sure?
I'm sure.
Camila gently nudges me past customer service, down the hallway that leads to the bathroom. I follow her, my heart pounding so hard that I'm feeling dizzy. She stops and turns to face me, and all of a sudden, I'm not sure if I want to hear what she has to say to me.
Tess, her voice is gentle but firm, like a mother speaking to a naughty child. Graham hired me to look after you today and every day. You're not supposed to go off on your own. It's not safe.
I just wanted to take a walk. My voice has taken on a whiny tone, like I am that disobedient child. I know where we are. I'll be fine.
No, her dark eyebrows knit together. You won't be fine. You've wandered off before and haven't been able to find your way back. Graham was worried sick about you. That's why I'm here, Tess.
Of course, I can't contradict her. It's hard to make an argument based on things I've done or haven't done in the past when I can't remember a thing before this morning. That alone is troubling. Okay, maybe I've had bad days when I got lost or confused. I can accept that, but today is not a bad day, and I desperately want to get to the dog park. Harry won't stay there forever. He may have left already.
I'm not going to get lost, I say as calmly as I can. And honestly, it's not your decision to make. Like I said, I'm an adult. You can't stop me from leaving.
Camila's plump lips set into a straight line.
Actually, I can.
Excuse me?
Graham is your legal guardian. She stares at me, unblinking. We have the court documents to prove it. If you try to leave here, I'll call the police and they'll bring you back to the house.
My breath catches in my throat.
You're lying.
We've had to do it before. She purses her lips.
Several times. It wasn't pleasant, trust me. I hope we don't have to do it today, but I will if I have to.
How?
I can barely choke out the words.
How could you do that to me?
Her eyes soften. It's for your own safety, Tess. You're not competent to—
Bullshit!
A few people in the grocery store turn to stare at us, but I don't care. Camila is lying to me. I am an adult. I could walk out of here anytime I want, and there's nothing she could do to stop me. The police won't stop me. If I called them, she would be the one who ended up in jail. But Camila doesn't seem perturbed by my outburst. She looks like she expected it. There's a weariness in her expression, like she's had this conversation with me dozens of times before. The crease between her eyebrows grows deeper.
You think you're okay, she says, but you're not, Tess. Your memory is badly impaired. You get confused easily.
I'm not confused.
And you imagine things that aren't there, she goes on. Like, sometimes you imagine your ex-boyfriend Harry has been texting you and asking you to meet him.
I freeze.
What? You say Harry is texting you, telling you Graham is evil, that he's not really your husband. She sighs. That's one reason you've wandered away.
My mouth hangs open. For a moment, I'm speechless. Maybe he really was texting me. She slowly shakes her head.
But he wasn't. We checked your phone and there was no sign of the messages, and we would go to the place he told you to meet him, and he was never there.
Maybe he left.
Tess, Harry doesn't even live in New York anymore. He moved out west years ago. He's married to someone else now.
She rests a hand on my shoulder.
Oh, Tess, is that where you were trying to go? To meet Harry?
I feel dizzy. I need to lean against the wall to keep from passing out. My brain is suddenly fuzzy. What she's telling me. It can't be true. I did get a text from Harry today. He told me to meet him at the dog park. I saw him there. He looked right at me. I didn't imagine that. Did I? I reach into my pocket for my phone. But of course, I have deleted all the text messages he sent me. If only he hadn't told me to delete them. Then I would have proof. Camila is frowning at me.
Tess, are you okay?
I pull up my sleeve to reveal the number I scribbled there earlier. Camila's eyes widen when she sees it, but I don't even care anymore. I type the number into my phone and send off a text message.
Where are you?
I stare at my phone, waiting. Camila says nothing, just stands there with me. But nothing happens. No bubbles appear on the screen. Nobody's replying to my text message.
Oh, God.
Where did he say you should meet?
She asks. I hang my head. The dog park. She nods in understanding. The look of pity in her eyes is too much for me. My own eyes fill with tears. I don't understand what's happening. It all felt so real.
I miss Harry a lot, I murmur. I wish you were here.
Camila strokes my hair gently.
I know, sweetie.
I close my eyes for a moment, remembering the day I met Harry Finch. I was only 2 years out of college, and I was at Best Buy, looking at computers and tending to purchase a laptop. I was talking to the salesman, but this boy about my age, with dark hair and eyes, wearing jeans and a t-shirt, was listening in. After a couple of minutes, he started correcting the salesman, who clearly didn't know what he was talking about. The salesman became more and more flustered until he finally burst out,
"Do you want to take over here?"
The boy blinked a few times and finally smiled.
"Yeah, that would be great."
When the salesman was gone, we just stood there for a minute, smiling nervously at each other.
"I'm Tess," I finally said.
He jabbed a thumb at his chest.
"Harry."
"Nice to meet you, Harry."
I pointed at his shirt.
"What does that mean?"
Harry looked down at the writing on his t-shirt. "There's no place like 127.0.0.1. I didn't know at the time it was one of his favorite shirts.
127.0.0.1 is the local host IP address, he explained. It's the home network on a PC, so...
There's no place like home.
Exactly.
I laughed and he rewarded me with a smile that made his entire face light up.
Listen, Tess, I'm happy to help you pick out a computer if you'd like, but what I'd really like to do is take you to dinner tonight.
He ran a hand through his dark hair, and I still remember how he was shaking a bit.
So, what do you say?
I will never forget how happy he looked when I said yes. His expression will stay with me forever. Or the way he looked into my eyes when he asked me to marry him. It's all so vivid. Yet I can't seem to remember my freaking wedding day. How is that possible?
Tess? Camila squeezes my shoulder, bringing me back to the present. Are you okay?
No. I swallowed down a lump in my throat. Please take me to the dog park. Now.
Chapter 12. I don't say one word to Camila as we're driving to the dog park. She left all the groceries behind at the supermarket. I was too upset to wait for her to finish shopping and go through checkout. I needed to get to the dog park immediately. I needed to know the truth. While I'm sitting in the car, I shoot off more text messages to the number scribbled on my arm. I'm on my way to the dog park. Don't leave. I'm almost there. Please don't leave. The entire day, every time I sent a text, a reply came almost instantly. But there's no reply to any of these text messages. It's like there's nobody on the other line at all. I don't understand it. I Google the name Harrison Finch. I brace myself for a Facebook page featuring a picture of Harry with his arm around some beautiful woman. But nothing comes up. There's no mention of Harrison Finch anywhere. It gives me hope. Some. Camila pulls into a spot next to the dog park. I've got my phone gripped in my right hand and I'm afraid to look up. Because, in my heart, I know what I'm going to see.
Tess?
Camila says. I raise my eyes. The dog park is a stone's throw away from the car. All the people I saw at the park earlier have left. It's empty. But Harry was there earlier. I know it. I unbuckle my seatbelt and leap out of the car. I sprint over to the gate enclosing the dog park. My fingers wrap around the cool metal wires, which dig into my skin. I stare into the empty space. Harry isn't there. Was he ever there? I don't know anymore. Is Camila right? Is Harry really gone from my life? Has he already left the state? Is he married to another woman? His time with me a distant memory?
Tess.
I turn around. It wasn't Camila who said my name this time. It was Graham, my husband, apparently. He's standing in front of me, still wearing the expensive gray suit that fits him like a glove, holding Ziggy's leash, the locks of his sand-colored hair tousled by the wind. He offers me a hopeful smile.
Camila texted me to come here with Ziggy, he explains.
Ziggy is straining at his leash. He licks my hand excitedly. I run my hand over his fur and instantly I feel better. Dogs are magical. I don't know what I would have done today without him.
I thought we could let Ziggy play in the dog park a bit, he says. I'll let Camila go home early and we could spend some time here.
I look over at Camila, who is watching us from the car. I wonder how many times in the last year Graham has driven home early to make sure I was okay. I wonder how many times I've freaked out at the supermarket. I wonder how many text messages I've imagined from Harry.
Tess?
Graham furrows his brow.
What do you say?
I run my hand over Ziggy's head. Yes, that sounds nice. Chapter 13. Graham and I end up having a great afternoon at the dog park. He brought a rubber ball for Ziggy. The two of us take turns throwing it, and Ziggy brings it back for us. Although it's hard not to notice that my dog is not a fan of Graham. No matter which one of us throws the ball, he always brings it back to me.
He doesn't like men,
Graham explains. I laugh. Really? Why not?
Well, he says thoughtfully, I think he wants to be the only man in your life. I can't blame him.
Ziggy trots back to me with the now sopping wet ball. I toss it underhand across the enclosed area. Tell me something interesting about yourself, I say to Graham.
Let's see.
He taps his chin, and I'm pleased he has to think about it. Maybe this isn't something I ask him every single day.
I'm ambidextrous. Is that interesting?
A little. What else?
I can do a superb French accent.
I raise my eyebrows at him. Really?
Oui, mademoiselle. This is the true.
I allow myself to laugh at Graham's truly terrible French accent. Do you speak French?
No, just English.
I'm not cultured.
Me too, just English.
I know.
My smile slips. Oh, yeah, I guess you know most things about me.
Ziggy runs up to me and deposits the moist ball in my hand. I give it to Graham so he can have a turn throwing it. My fingers briefly brush against his, and I can't tell if he notices.
What was our wedding like?
His blue eyes grow distant.
It was nice. Not too big. We did it in a church, and your dad gave you away. Lucy was your maid of honor. The guests got a choice of lobster or steak at the reception.
Did we write our own vows or something cheesy like that?
No.
He laughs. He has a nice laugh that makes little lines crinkle around his eyes. I can see why I might have fallen in love with this man.
You were emphatic about that. No writing our own vows, no reading of poetry, nothing cheesy like that.
Did anybody object during the ceremony?
He snorts.
You mean like Harry?
I flinch. Sorry, I just... He pushes his glasses at the bridge of his nose.
It's okay, Tess. I get it. The last thing you remember is being engaged to Harry Finch. But you need to know, he wasn't good to you. You had a good reason for breaking up with him.
So I ended it. I'm the one who broke up with Harry. I want to ask Graham what happened, but it's too weird. He's my husband. We've been married for 4 whole years. I can't ask him about my ex-boyfriend, even though I can't stop thinking about him. Ziggy returns the ball to me again, panting excitedly. I nearly throw it, but instead, I hold it out to Graham to take it from me. He reaches for it, and once again his fingers brush against mine. This time he definitely notices. His eyes lock with mine for a moment,